We're going to talk for the rest of the hour about big science stories of 2003. Our number 1-800-989-8255. With me is John Reddy. Rennie, I keep getting his disease in the name. Rennie, editor-in-chief of Scientific American, and Casey Cole, who is a reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Casey, that Stardust, exciting sort of thing, if you're into space
yes,
missions?
Yes, I mean, it's a beginning. Actually, a question I'd had, but I already asked the director of JPL about this, was, if you take material from A Tale of a Comet, how representative is it actually of what's in the comet? And that's not known yet. So all of these things are incremental. I think it's wonderful. You see the pictures of this thing. It looks like they put up a big piece of flypaper, you know, and they're catching these. It's very, very – and all of these technologies turn out to be useful. So I think it's very interesting in that respect.
And this was done pretty much on the cheap too, wasn't it? Comparatively.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, these things build on each other. So, for example, when you watch the Mars landings that, you know, hopefully Spirit will land safely tonight, it's a very big version of the Sojourner rover that was there before. And that was an experimental test mission to see if certain technologies could actually work. So these kinds of missions are essential in order to take the next steps.
Mm-hmm. John, let me ask you to put on your prognosticators.
Oh, it's always a dangerous thing to do, but go ahead.
Be careful with that crystal ball you're taking out of your briefcase. What a year from now, what do you think we'll be saying would be a big 2004?
Let's see. Always dangerous. Here again, it's sort of here's a good broad enough prediction that it's almost impossible for it to be wrong, and yet I'm fairly sure it will also be right this way. So how about this one?
All right.
Going back, you know, this past year we talked about was the it's been the 50th anniversary of the discovery of the double helix for DNA, mm-hmm. and you know, a few years ago, of course, we completed the human genome project. We sorted out the sequence of the subunits that are in human DNA. Continuing to make sense of that is an ongoing project. I think what we're going to hear much more about over this next year, though, I would direct everybody to listen for the word epigenetics.
Ooh.
Epigenetics is it's kind of an offshoot of genetics. It's clear that the information of our genes really is encoded in the sequence of bases in the DNA itself. And yet, one of the things that there's been a growing awareness of in these past few years has been that it's not all just a straightforward matter of what's in the DNA of that describing what your actual expressed genetics are. More and more people are seeing how the RNA is a very, very active player. There's been more and more focus on something called microRNAs, which do much more of a job of directing really how the information in the DNA itself is used. And I think epigenetics, which is this general field of something that's on top of genetic information, of how we're more than just the readout of our DNA information. That's something that I think we're going to start to hear much more about in 2004 and the years ahead.
Hmm. Casey, have you got your cap on there?
Well, in the best of all possible worlds, if everything goes perfectly, first of all, we're going to see a lot more from the WMAP satellite. The reading the cosmic microwave background is just an incredible business for a lot of people, and they're learning something new every day. Same thing for astronomy and being able to see new things. For example, one of the puzzles they may be able to at least begin to solve is that the dark energy, one of the problems with it is it's changed over time. It had to be very big in the beginning of the universe, then it had to be a lot less so galaxies could form, then it had to get big again, and so forth. And they can tell by looking at very distant exploding stars how that repulsive force has changed. So that could happen. You know, I would love to see, and, you know, could happen at Fermilab, evidence for extra dimensions, for example, maybe some hints of gravitational waves. Mm-hmm. These are a little far reaches, but they both could happen.
Hmm. Okay. This is exciting stuff. I'll give you one. I'll just go into a different neighborhood. I'll just say I think nanotechnology finally will.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's true. But, you know, bear in mind, what is nanotechnology? And the answer is nanotechnology is largely whatever the people who say they're nanotechnologists say it is. I mean, nanotechnology, once you strip away the idea of nanotechnology as a kind of marketing term, a lot of what falls under real nanotechnology is what used to be called plain old, you know, applied chemistry. chemistry and semiconductor research. And I think that, most of what's really paying off in terms of actual results in nanotechnology is in that fairly mundane area.
Talking about predicting 2004 this hour in Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Casey, jump in.
Oh, I was just going to jump in about nanotechnology. I do think it's probably a lot more exciting than that, simply because you're getting down on the scale of single atoms or very small groups of atoms where you can see phenomena and manipulate phenomena that has never been possible before. And who knows what we'll be able to do with that, but it's definitely going to teach us a lot more about the way materials and matter behave.
I would never disagree with that. I think that's all true. I think that my statement is really meant as sort of a counterbalance to a certain level of the hype where people hear nanotechnology and they think extremely tiny robots that are now prowling your body repairing all of your cells. Here's my prediction. You're not going to hear that in 2004.
I think stem cells is going to pan out this year. I have a hunch that something major, some cure of some kind.
Can I offer a slightly different take on that, which is that I sure hope something does, because I think currently for October in 2004 is when the UN's vote on human cloning work is being postponed till. I think in a lot of ways you could make the argument that if by that time there isn't something fairly concrete that's paid off in stem cell research and the cloning work related to stem cell research, there's a real possibility of a very broad worldwide ban being imposed, and that's going to frankly cause a lot of stem cell research to grind to a halt.
I think the parthenogenesis field is really ripe.
I hope you're right.
For something to happen here, and it's almost like almost like predicting politics sometimes. You make the same prediction every year. Maybe one of these years it will pan out. But
speaking of politics, if I can jump in,
Very
early in the program you mentioned weapons of mass destruction, and one of the things I hope we can get through to the general public somehow is that there is a huge difference between biological and chemical weapons, which are certainly horrific terrorist weapons, as we learned, commercial airliners being flown into buildings. But only nuclear weapons can vaporize Chicago or Moscow or Tokyo in a second. And differentiating what's really a weapon of mass destruction, I think, can help us focus a lot more on what are the real, clear and immediate present dangers, as opposed to, you know, ones that are less of a threat. And so we don't get all hysterical about the wrong things.
I think that's a very good point, because I think that you can't impose meaningfully the same kinds of bans that you want on, say, nuclear weapon technology and extend that to what's going on to biological and chemical research. And that's indirectly what comes from a broad, fairly meaningless label like weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year, and I hope we'll have all of you back next January 2004, and hopefully we've primed everybody to keep an eye open for interesting stuff that will happen. Let me wish you both a happy, healthy New Year.
And to you.
You too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and thank you both for joining me this hour. Casey Cole, science correspondent for Los Angeles Times, and John Rennie, editor-in-chief of Scientific American Magazine. Thanks again. Earlier, we spoke with Rob Ryan, who was Flight Operations Manager for the Stardust mission at NASA's JPL. And Kevin Wade is our Technical Director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello here in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Vinn. If you have any questions, you want to write to us, and you like to write in longhand the classic mail way, you can write to us at Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10020. If you missed any of the references we make during Science Friday, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. They'll be up there. Charles has them up there. We also have a new Science Friday page. Look, tell us if you like the way the page looks. Interesting new design. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection free material, free teaching materials that we make out of Science Friday, available to students and their teachers. And also, you can listen to back editions of Science Friday on Real Audio and take them with you on your Audible.com players. Happy New Year to all of you. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.